Hello and welcome to the podcast, The Lotus Eaters, for the 17th of September, 2021. I'm joined by Josh.
Hello.
And today we're talking about the Andrew Neil deciding to backstab GB News live on BBC Question Time, which was shocking to see. I was skeptical about how much he is to blame, and now I'm very much in the camp of screw that guy, because he acted terribly. Also, the illegal immigration chaos at the US-Mexico border, which you'll be telling about. And also, Islam is Islamophobic, according to Islamists.
How does that work?
I don't know, it was very based. Anyway, some of the things to mention first. So the first thing here, being on the website, so the video Carl did, What Should Be Done. So this is him talking about responsibility and arbitrating what's right and wrong, especially within your own household. So going with that.
I've watched it, it's very good.
So that's the rec one from Carl. Next thing to mention is the silver tier audio idea. So the first one here being the audio on the article you did,
yep.
The psychological impacts of lockdowns. This one is, I believe, open to everyone who's premium because it's the tester one. But if we go to the next one, apparently there's another one now. So there's a new article from Hugo, The Rise of Democratic Technocracy. And in here, there's an audio link. And this one is just for silver tiers, which is how we will be doing things going forwards. Because that was the idea. It's something for silver tiers. So there's a point to silver tier.
And this should have just gone up now, I believe, at 1 o'clock.
So that's there. Also, last thing to mention, which is for the gold tiers, which is that we have the Zoom call last Thursday of this month, not the last Friday of this month, because of the live event. So if you want to come and join us, and you should if you're a gold tier member, it's 4 p.m. UK time. I can't remember the date. If you can scroll back to the top.
It's just Thursday the 23rd.
Thursday the 23rd of this month, we'll be doing that. So also, I'm mentioning the live event being the reason we can't do this. Here's the live event. So I'm pretty sure everyone knows the deal by now, but except for the new guests, which is that we have Andrew Lawrence on the Friday and Leo on the Saturday for the live events as the special guests, and also there'll be other people there, and Carl and Dankula doing their sets, as well as my secret speech, which I'm not going to spoil. So there's that. So buy tickets, come see us, it'll be good fun, we'll go drinking after, it'll be nice, it always is. Anyway, let's get into Andrew Neil being a... No. I'm sorry, I'm mad. Like, he really messed this up. Like, he...
I know, I couldn't really believe it when I saw what he said. I mean, I don't want to spoil what you're about to say, but...
So Andrew Neil decided to stab GB News in the back on his way out, which is disgusting. So we did a segment previously in which we talked about that Andrew Neil decided he would resign from GB News after doing like 6 episodes and then going off for 3 months.
I think he was in his holiday home in France.
Yeah, and then he left and he gave some weird reasoning of like, oh yeah, they're too populist for me, which is pathetic, but whatever. Okay, whatever. If he just wants to leave, break ties, it's one thing, right? Okay, that's one thing. Sad. It's weak, but it's one thing. What he did on... BBC Question Time is another thing in which he literally just stabbed his own people in the back. So I wanted to mention, what does GB News do, in case people are wondering? Some of the best things I've just remembered off the top of my head out of this. So some of the monologues from Mercy, for example, have been fantastic. So she made a great monologue talking about critical race theory within schools and the fact that it does not need to be there because it is evil. And that is correct.
Mm-hmm.
It is also illegal, by the way.
Mercy's done some great work on the race report as well, which...
Yeah.
Leftists went absolutely nuts about.
So you have her, we have another one from her in which she talks about knife crime and the things that need to be said about knife crime, so we can get the next one up. So you have her saying, when knife crime is on the rise, it means more black kids on the streets, their blood spilling, and more black kids in jail. Yep. Like, going after the tough issues that the corporate media, the mainstream, BBC, will not touch. If we carry on, we have some other great stuff they've been up to. So we have Andrew Doyle. So Andrew Doyle's segments have been fantastic. He spends his time defending free speech and calling out woke ideas as something that needs to be destroyed. And also an example here of saying that we should have an end to non-crime crime, because that's nonsense and everyone knows it, and something the Conservatives should have got around to long ago. And then we have another example, which is just Nigel Farage talking to a guy about the problems with channel migrants and the fact that this issue is not going away, it's getting worse and worse. And these are issues which are not touched or want to be ignored by the traditional outlets in Britain. So GB News fills that hole. They do their job, they're doing it well in those regards. There are issues, there's always going to be issues with all these things. Andrew Neil did not act fair or balanced in response to any of this. He decided to just completely stab these people in the back, in my view. So let's look at this. So this is BBC Question Time. This is yesterday. I thought this was going to be a rerun or something, but no, he immediately quit his job and then went back to the BBC, which is...
Has he actually formally gone back, or is he just...
He went back as a guest on the show.
Okay, yeah.
Presumably he'll be doing more of that rather than going on GB News. I don't think he's ever going to be invited on GB News after this, unless he wants to go there to stab them in the back some more. So let's talk about this. See, let's play the first clip in which he talks about how GB News is full of conspiracy theories.
With the recent GB News resignations, will it become a new British Fox News?
Well, who could answer that? Andrew Neil.
Well, I had always made it clear it wouldn't be a British Fox News. And I think you could do something different without going anywhere near Fox. Fox deals in untruths. It deals in conspiracy theories. And it deals in fake news. And that's not my kind of journalism. And I would never have set out to do that.
Is that why you've left?
I'll let you draw your own conclusions as to why I'm here tonight and not with GB News on that.
No, hang on, Andy, you're not going to get off that lightly.
Well, I wasn't expecting
why?
To.
Why? No.
So very smugly, very, like, not going to address it openly. Mm. He's like, yeah, Fox News, that's all fake news, conspiracy theory nonsense. And if they want to do that, that's up to GB News. Also, I've left GB News. Right, so you're calling GB News conspiracy theory really yeah. fake news.
I mean, it's thinly veiled, isn't it? Where he's trying to be like, well, I'm not going to call them any names, but also Fox News is like this and they want to be more like this.
Yep.
I mean, why not just say it? Why not be explicit about what your opinions are?
Why not have some balls about it, at least? Mm. Like, it's very pathetic. But the other part there of just being, name it. Like, name the conspiracy theories GB News is engaged in, or Fox News, or, you know, just name the things. Why just throw around these abstract concepts of they're bad? And why are they bad? Hmm? What's the problem with them? Trying to keep conservatives together, some of the few forces in the West trying to do that. And yeah, they're the bad guys here. Right. Okay. So then we move on to her asking, well, you're not going to get off that easily. Why did you leave? And he gives his reasons for leaving. So let's play.
This is your first appearance on anything other than GB News since you announced your resignation. Why have you quit?
In the run-up to the launch, through the launch, and in the aftermath of the launch, and I think most of you have known anything about it will know, you couldn't file the launch under startling success. More and more differences emerged between myself and the other senior managers and the board of GB News. And rather than these differences narrowing, they got wider and wider. And I felt it was best that if that's the route they wanted to take, then that's up to them. It's their money.
What was that route?
And, well, the route is what I think is what you can see on GB News at the moment. People should make up their own minds as to whether that's what they want to watch. I thought it wasn't for me, and I had wanted a different route. Doesn't mean I'm right or they're wrong, but it certainly was a difference.
And is it because you felt they were going too far to the right?
I also spent the summer looking at all
now
the
I'm
work
asking,
I had
is
been,
it that you felt they were going too far to the right?
People should make up their own minds on that.
No, but we're just wondering why you've
What I've told you is that the differences were such that the direction they were going in was not the direction that I had outlined. It was not the direction that I had envisaged for the channel. But I was in minority of one. So it's doing what it's doing, and it's up to them. Good luck to them if that's what they want to do. But it wasn't going to be with me.
I really dislike this vague language he uses on purpose.
I know, it's so much worse, the fact that he was someone who would go very hard on politicians and ask them difficult questions and be insistent. And now he's becoming the very politicians that he seemed to dislike when he was interviewing them.
The way he's acting.
Yeah, he's...
So, but we can read through the lines, obviously, and he gives the point that the senior board wanted something and he didn't want to be part of that. Well, what did they want? They wanted Nigel Farage. They wanted populism. And if you want to define that as something, non-elitist conservatism. So a conservative movement that is non-elitist is not made up of people who all went to Oxbridge, but instead also includes lots of average people, you know, the people who vote them into power, the people whose interests they are meant to serve, you know? And you have this in the United States to a much larger degree than you have it in the UK, the Conservative Party versus the Republican Party, for example. Like, you just look at the Trump movement and the Republican Party, it's far less stuck up than
yeah,
the Conservative Party.
Yeah, you can definitely say that.
It's so easy to see, regardless of your thoughts on the thing, or you don't like a bit of this or a bit of that, because, you know, Britain is a different place, we have different cultures mm-hmm. and the rest of it. The Republican Party is not the stuck-up nature that the Conservative Party does here.
I mean, one of the defining features of Trump was that he never acted holier than thou, did he? He wasn't acting as if, yeah, I'm better than the people who vote for me. He explicitly said, yeah, you're great people.
And amazingly, he can do that in a gold chair in a gold-plated room, and it still makes sense, because the intent and the message behind his movement and his words are there. And also, who doesn't want to be that guy, you know? Anyway, so there's that. And so he left, and he says pretty much explicitly here, even though he's trying to get around the point by not saying it, which is that they wanted people like Nigel Farage to be involved. They wanted the, let's say, rightists of the UK, who are not the prim and proper types who become government ministers to be involved. There's nothing wrong with that. And you're a weirdo for thinking there's something wrong with that. Like, that's those people should be involved. If they're not involved, then what is the movement, you know? Anyway, so then we get to the next part in which he goes down to get even worse, I think. So let's go to the next clip.
You know, lockdown and the summer and all the rest of it made us rethink our priorities as well. And I decided, too, it was time I had to cut down on some of my commitments and perhaps maybe enjoy myself a little bit more. now. You can get to appear on Question Time every now and then, which I haven't done for 2 decades. And that given that these differences have emerged, these disagreements of the direction of the channel and the way it was going, and many other things too, I don't want to bore you with, it seemed to me that one of the commitments I should give up is GB News. And that's what I've done. I'm very comfortable with it. Indeed, I feel at peace with myself. As a result, people know my kind of journalism, and that's where I'm going to stick to.
Well, we're very pleased to have you here tonight, Andrew. I'm glad you didn't decide, out of all the things you're giving up, you give us up as well.
Look at that. Look at all the wording around that. I mean, the fact that he wanted to enjoy himself, so he had to give up some commitments, because, I mean, he's very old. Okay, yeah, sure, you might be getting old. But you gave up GB News and you kept BBC Question Time. Wanted to stay with them, and they're glad you didn't give them up instead of the baby you spawned. Like, your own personal project, the thing you went out of your way, you know, got all your friends involved to do this project, and you're like, nah, I'm just going to go back to the BBC, go on Question Time.
I suppose the most charitable interpretation would be that I suppose he's not as committed with going on Question Time. He can pick and choose when he goes on, whereas with GB News, he had to be more involved. But then that's kind of a bit of a...
It's up to him. He clearly wasn't that involved. I mean, he did, like, what was it, 8 episodes and then left for 3 months?
Yeah, I know.
He could come back and do 8 more episodes and then leave for 3 more months. It's up to him.
I suppose he could just negotiate to say, okay, well, I only want one day a week or something like that. And that should surely be fine.
He's the boss. You can do what you want there. You know, no one's going to question it. They're going to be like, yeah, don't worry, mate. You know, you're in your 70s. No one's going to be like, no, you must work. That's not going to happen. So instead, he wants to spend his time with Question Time. And Question Time are very happy that he's back at the BBC working with them. Who's he sharing shelf space with? Remember, it's the BBC. I mean, the organization that literally had a nonce for decades. I mean, I don't think we should ever forget the BBC and Jimmy Savile's involvement with them. So anyway, let's go to the next one, which is just the new link here, which is people grilling or dunking on the whole situation. So some guy saying, came for the posting on BBC Question Time, and oh boy, I did not leave disappointed. So there's this guy, who's some leftist, who decides to go after Andrew Neil, and his criticism is, Andrew, you knew it wasn't going to be woke, so you were trying to set up an anti-woke organization. How dare you do this? Like, he's mad that he dared to do such a thing. And Andrew has a not very convincing rebuttal. Let's play this clip.
Why Britain's new TV news channel won't be woke. So, and I thought to myself, I'd just bring that along. And for the benefit of those at home, also, I bought a bigger copy too. So there we go. So Andrew can.
Everyone is familiar with GB News, so you might have to explain why you brought that.
So GB News, everybody's not familiar with GB News. It's the.
Well.
Okay, so
the viewing figures would suggest that not everyone is.
Absolutely, you're right. Absolutely, they are close to zero viewers on an ongoing basis, for a long time now. GB News was set up, as it says over here in black and white, and a channel that was intended to not be quote unquote woke. That it was going to be a channel that was going to fight the quote unquote culture wars.
Good.
I posited to you, Andrew, that you actually knew exactly what you guys were setting up. That you were setting up, when you used the term like woke as a pejorative, I put it to you that you knew exactly who that dog whistle, you exactly knew the dog you were blowing that whistle at.
So why am I not still
so
there?
So articulate.
That's up to you. Well, why were you there to begin with when you're doing that?
If you're saying that what's happened is what I wanted, why would I be here tonight and not still
because
the channel?
That is a fair point, to be fair.
No, but it's a pathetic response too.
Yeah.
So his criticism is, you wanted to set up a non-woke TV station.
Mm-hmm.
Good. That's a good thing. No one wants racial gender socialism, for Christ's sake. Like, only weirdos who live in metropolitan cities and go to universities like this. Like, this sort of thing. You know, you have to be indoctrinated to get to this point. No one else buys this crap. Anyway, so there's the accusation. Oh my God, how dare he try and set up something that's not woke, explicitly, and to fight back against that sort of thing. You know, Andrew Doyle being a great example of someone who does a show on there doing that exact thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not a criticism. That's based. That's good. It's a wholesome thing. And the entire panel is like, oh my God, you hypocrite. Sorry, not hypocrite. How are you, you heretic? Like, how could you do such a thing? And then his response to that should be, well, yeah, of course. Like, there should be a polarity of views. And instead he responds with, well, why am I not there then? I was like, well, that makes it sound like you want it to be woke. That you are upset that it's not woke.
Like, yeah, I know what you mean. Weird. Yeah. I didn't really think about it like that, but I suppose you could infer it. That, yeah, we set it up explicitly to be anti-woke, right? Yeah. And then he's left.
Andrew, you set it up to be anti-woke. That's very bad. Don't worry, I've left. What? Like, no, based, double down. That's the point. If you actually cared about this project, if you actually cared about the idea of fighting back against these leftists, but instead he just capitulates on it. And it's just sad They're like, how dare you say woke is bad? And he's like, oh, don't worry, I repent, I left. Embarrassing, utter embarrassing, anyway. So let's go to the final clip in which you have him then saying this, and in response, the entire panel just spent the entire rest of the time talking about this, just dunking on GB News as GB News bad. Why? Because it's a heretic. It's an organization that is not woke, it is not part of the elitist types. Let's continue with this clip.
What GB News did represent is the exact same thing that Fox News represented, which was for the purpose of re-mainstreaming and maintaining almost a cocktail of bigotries within our nation under the quote-unquote term woke. And it's good to see that Andrew's left it, but it's sad to see that Andrew's actually has thrown his considerable pearl to this swine of an outfit.
Will it become a British Fox News? Is that something you'd like to see?
Well, look, I don't know what it's going to become. I stopped watching it after Andrew stopped his show, frankly. I don't know where GB News goes. I'm not sure I massively care, but I think that what the problem is...
In my view, we don't need a channel that spreads dissent and hatred, that creates division within our communities. We don't need a channel that insults and ridicules. But too often we seem to defend hatred, abuse and division in the name of, and again, it's a trite cliche that's used too lazily. We call it free speech. Well, I say, what about good manners?
If it's going to survive, let's hope it survives with a slightly different methodology used to bring back good news and not cause divisions, as you've said, because I think division isn't something we need in this world that we're living in now.
I mean, talking like the Communist Party. Though.
Causing divisions.
How dare you cause divisions, comrade? This is a high-fisted state in which we do not have divisions, disagreements.
Standing
you're woke
up,
or you're out.
Standing up for British culture and not being rolled over by communists,
yeah,
Marxists.
You're causing divisions within the party. The party being the wokus. Like, that's their problem.
Stalin would approve of your rhetoric.
Yeah, but also the disgustingness of Andrew Neil there, where the conservative defence minister, again, dunking on the people who prop up your ideology. What's wrong with you? Anyway, so then this guy is dunking on GB News, being like, I don't watch it anymore, and I don't really care what happens to it. And you can see Andrew Neil begin to laugh in response to that in agreement. And it's just like, wow. Okay. Like, these are your people, are they? These are the people you want to hang out with. These are the people who are far more better than those damn dirty populists like Nigel Farage or, I don't know, Andrew Doyle or Mercy. Like, these people are way better than them, are they? No, these people are awful.
He's trying to ingratiate himself with people who are making fun of him as well, and he's just happy to take it.
Like, all those people on that panel hate you, hate your ideology, hate everything you do, they want Britain destroyed, and then you have GB News guys who are just doing the good work, okay? You can say they have a problem here, a problem there. Nothing compared to the panel you have there as a counterexample. And he's like, yeah, no, these are my people. I'm not hanging out with those ones. The dirty populace. I want to hang out with these people, these elitists. But like, we don't need division within the party. Pathetic. Utterly pathetic. It's just sad.
And them saying, oh, it's a cocktail of bigotry as well. Like, yeah. I've watched lots of their coverage. I mean, I don't know whether they have, apparently. I mean, it seems perfectly level-headed and reasonable to me. How anyone can be like, yeah, well, it's just an outlet for...
leftists. They don't watch anything. They just say that the right is bad. Why have you ever read anything or watched anything they do? They don't know. Why would they? They're just like, no, it's bad. Why would I watch that? That would make me bad. Anyway. But also the point is just like the other people, like all of the people involved who he got together to do this project and still doing it and doing the good work, these people gave up their time and talent to work with Andrew Neil, and he then went on Question Time to hang out with a bunch of people and stab them in the back. It's bad enough that he decided, I'm just going to do 8 shows and then leave. Whatever. You know, wants to part ways. Whatever. But then to go on the enemy, the BBC, and then to stab him in the back and say that, yeah, it's horrible. Oh, it's dying. Oh, I'm glad about that. You know, cheeky smile. You know, the other people slagging it off constantly. And he's like, yeah, that's great. No, I'm sorry. There is no redemption for that. That is a horrible individual to the friends who gave up their time and talent to help him create a project that he then just waltzed off from and then wants it buried. Just disgusting. Anyway, so moving on from that, there's some other changes, let's say, in the media sphere of the UK that are going on. So everyone was wondering, as Carl mentioned before, which is, where's Piers Morgan in all this? Because he stormed off Good Morning Britain. Why did he not go over to GB News? Apparently he signed up with Rupert Murdoch at News Corp to set up something else. Piers Morgan signs deal with News Corp and Fox News Media for global TV show to air on Talk TV in the UK. I've not heard of it. Fox Nation for US audiences on Sky News Australia. So
I think Talk TV is meant to be Talk Radio's like TV equivalent. At least I think so.
So this is Rupert Murdoch back. Rupert Murdoch being the guy who owns News Corp and then Fox News, News Australia, mm-hmm. So, you know, that kind of thing. Fine, that's a thing. But again, it's like, well, what's wrong with the GB News guys? And it makes me wonder, like, what's the bigotry about here? Anyway, moving on from this. So if we mention Piers Morgan, I have to mention the fact that I don't really have any respect for this guy either. I'm on top of the myriad of other problems with the guy. Mm-hmm. This is one that I think gets shoved by the wayside too much, which is he is literal fake news. Like, he literally got fired for making fake news. So we have the example here from the Daily Mirror. He used to be the editor of the Daily Mirror, communist outlet, socialist paper, and they published images of what they claimed to be British soldiers denigrating Iraqis. Turns out those images were taken in northwest England? They were staged. They were literally just faked.
So that's I didn't even know about that.
That's why you have the next one saying, mm-hmm. sorry, we were hoaxed, because they had to fire Piers Morgan because he was like, yeah, he just gave us fake photos, and then insisted they were real and ran them. And then has also refused to ever say that he apologizes for this. His defense is that, yeah, well, bad things were going on in Iraq that are similar to this. Therefore, the fake photos are allowed or proper to be printed. And it's like, no, that doesn't follow.
Piers Morgan is just an awful human being. Yeah. And the fact he's getting any involvement with the riot at all is a point of great shame, surely.
It's strange, to say the least. But it's also the defense of, like, the BBC, you know, when I think they were caught faking a gas attack. Like, they reconstructed it, they said, to be like, ah, well, here's an example of what the gas attack in Syria might have looked like, but they didn't tell you. It was like, well, no, you have to show the footage or you can't. Like, that's the whole point in the news. You can't just make stuff up, you know, unless you're going to put a little reconstruction thing there. Anyway, so moving on from that, we have some other stuff. So if we mention GB News, we've got to mention that BBC Question Time, also trying to dunk on them at the same time. Media watchdog Ofcom has said it will not formally investigate comments made by Dan Wooten's GB News show about the effectiveness of lockdown rules. Again, them looking like the good guys, opposing lockdowns, saying that this is bad. Maybe we should give people their freedoms back. They're the bad guys here, are they? Mm-hmm. Right here, BBC. So if we go through this, so we go to the next link. This is the BBC article. And this is what their complaints about this damn evil, dirty man Dan Wooten has done. Wooten called for restrictions to end and encouraged viewers to push back against doomsday scientists on the channel's opening night, 13th of June. What a bad man. How dare he? How dare he say that locking down the entire country isn't proportionate? Evil. Wooten had likened the UK to China, because we did copy China's policy of lockdowns.
Xi Jinping's policy, yeah.
And said that the government had been controlling every damn aspect of our lives during the opening monologue of this first program on the news channel. His comments prompted 390 leftist complaints. Very mad. Very mad that he would say that maybe we shouldn't mm-hmm. follow policies coming out of communist China.
I mean, evil man. Isn't this just a hit piece by the BBC? This is like a taxpayer-funded hit piece on GB News.
Oh, of course, because they're the competition. You know, they're making the point that you don't need to pay for the BBC.
It's so transparent, though, isn't it? It's just like, yeah, we're going to target this, even though Ofcom's chosen not even to investigate. So what's really the story there?
But anyway,
just drawing attention.
Ofcom did say the right thing, and Ofcom spokeswoman said, our rules allow for rigorous debate around the response to coronavirus, consistent with the right to free expression. I love that. Even Ofcom's like, Jesus Christ, guys. Like, I know you guys are a bunch of censorious leftists, but if you're going to come to us and be like, some man on the news channel said that lockdowns is bad, shut it down. And even Ofcom's like, come on, Jesus Christ.
When Ofcom are the good guys, you kind of got to question.
The official government censors are even like, oh, Jesus, the left is awful. They think criticizing lockdowns is some kind of infringement. But anyway, yeah, that's the state of it. And I'm embarrassed by Andrew Neil. I think he should feel embarrassed. And people who gave up their time and talent to work for GB News, and are still doing it, and it will continue without him, of course, because, well, if he's going to leave, that's his problem. They should feel rightly miffed about him deciding to stab them in the back on public TV on the enemy station. Let's be frank about it.
GB News should carry on doing its good work, to be honest.
Yeah,
I mean,
Mercy,
without him.
Andrew Doyle, Farage, many others. I can't remember all the names off the top of my head, but they're all doing great work, and good lads. Keep it up.
Okay, so I wanted to talk about the chaos going on at the minute at the US border. Of course, this isn't necessarily anything new, but it's particularly bad at the minute, to the point where it's getting to what you can describe as a crisis. So obviously, things at the border have been kind of hotting up, and lots of migrant caravans have been coming to the border more and more so since Joe Biden has become president. And you may remember, of course, Kamala dragging her feet when asked about visiting the border wall itself. And eventually she did buckle and kind of do a kind of half-hearted photo op there, but didn't really do a lot or didn't really say much about how she's going to fix the situation. And of course, let's not forget that Biden stopped the construction of Trump's beautiful wall at the border, which we'll get onto in a second. But supposedly Fox News went down to the border yesterday and filmed some footage about the chaos going on.
I mean, just look at it.
I mean, we're going to have a look at a video of it in a second. Right. And Bill Malugin, Fox journalist, says our drone is back over the international bridge in Del Rio, Texas. Per source, the number of migrants waiting to be processed has now swelled to approximately 8,200. It was 4,000 yesterday a.m. Double in one day. BP overwhelmed, and I'm told situation is out of control. So supposedly, most of the people who are at the border are Haitian because Biden actually
Haiti
said...
Haiti is a S-hole country, as Trump called them.
Well, I don't think he's wrong.
No.
It's not a nice place to live. So I don't blame him for wanting to move, but in this extent...
Also, it's on the island of Hispaniola. Like, you have to go across the waters to get to Mexico to even get to the US border. Mm-hmm. And there are multiple safe countries that are not the asshole that Haiti is in between.
Absolutely. So why has this all started? Well, Biden announced that he's cancelling all deportation flights back to Haiti. And magically, as if there's no cause and effect, all these Haitians just appeared at the border.
You're telling us if we go to America, we won't get deported. Fantastic. Thank you, Biden.
And yeah, this is entirely created by Joe Biden. It's not unreasonable to say that. It was his decision to do this. And here they are. So
but it's not
obviously
the first
time these are Haitian as well. I mean, if you look at any of the footage, any of the images, they don't look Mexican. They don't look Latin American. They are Haitian. And let's remember, of course, that Haiti was a country that is mainly founded by freed slaves that used to live in America. They set up their own country.
I thought they were under the French.
It may well be. But nevertheless, there's lots of freed slaves there. And you'd think, okay, well, why would the descendants of freed slaves want to go to a country which the American left describes as institutionally racist? You'd think they might be a bit sensitive about that, but clearly they don't see it that way. So I have a question to the left, if any of them are actually watching. Probably not. But so the migrants disagree with you about this? Is America institutionally racist? All these people don't seem to be thinking so. Or are they just stupid? Are they naive?
At least they don't have to literally eat mud.
Yeah.
I mean, if anyone's wondering what I'm referencing there, Google mud cookies Haiti and have a look at that.
Ugh.
Yeah.
But anyway, let's go on to the video. So it's more or less like a moving town. Of course, there's 8,000 people. And it's all just chicken wire. It's basically a slum beneath the bridge there, isn't it? And all they've got is chicken wire and a handful of people. So if they actually wanted to, you know, storm across...
Nothing's stopping them.
Yeah, not really. I mean, they're clearly undermanned, aren't they? And just that tiny little wire fence isn't really going to do very much, is it? So... the New York Post has some stats on this. So apparently in August, there was about 208,000 encounters, which was actually a slight drop from July, where there was 212,000, but still amounts to a 317% increase from August 2020, when Trump was president, when there were only a mere 50,000 apprehensions and a 233% jump from August 2019, which recorded 62,000. So that's an exponential increase, isn't it? That's not small. That's well over double or triple the amount that are actually there.
I see the chat's calling it, you know, Hooverville from the Depression era? This is Bidenville. It's slum.
It's a good little nickname for it.
Yeah.
So there's not only has Biden created this mess, but he's also refused to fix it. So if we look at the statement here from the governor of Texas, Greg Abbott, he says here, 6 hours after the U.S. Customs and Border Protection requested help from Texas to close ports of entry and secure the border, the Biden administration has now flip-flopped to a different strategy that abandons border security and instead makes it easier for people to cross illegally and for cartels to exploit the border. The Biden administration is in complete disarray and is handling the border crisis as badly as the evacuation of Afghanistan. I have directed the Texas Department of Public Safety and the Texas National Guard to maintain their presence at and around ports of entry to deter crossings. Mm-hmm. And I am going to extend many compliments to Greg Abbott, because he seems to be dealing with this basically single-handedly, and he's doing quite a good job. And we're going to have a look at what he's actually doing to try and fix this in the absence of any real presidential leadership here.
He's also right to compare it to Afghanistan.
Yeah, definitely.
Same border crisis was made in the Afghan airport. All you had to do was have it controlled and strictly who's coming in, who's not coming in, and this evaporates. Never used to have this on, say, the border with Spain in Gibraltar, for example.
Absolutely, yeah. So Abbott is now closing points of entry into Texas because he was fearing that it was going to become overrun with illegal immigrants. And he states, "The sheer negligence of the Biden administration to do their job and secure the border is appalling. I've directed the Department of Public Safety and the Texas National Guard to surge personnel and vehicles to shut down 6 points of entry along the southern border to stop these caravans from overrunning the state." So he's actually having to just close the border, have a hard border no one can come across, because they're risking being overwhelmed. So this is the situation they're in. It's clearly critical. He says, the border crisis is so dire that the US Customs and Border Protection is requesting our help as their agents are overwhelmed by the chaos. Unlike President Biden, the state of Texas remains committed to securing our border and protecting Americans. So yeah, well done, Texans, for keeping America safe, I suppose, because all of these people, as Trump said, they're probably not going to be sending their best, are they? If they're willing to break into America illegally, they're not going to respect your other laws as well.
If they literally start their relationship off with the United States as one of being a criminal, how do you think this is going to continue?
Yeah, and it's not something that should ever continue. This is appalling, and the level of incompetence from Biden is astounding, really. I mean, it's not surprising, but even so...
Dementia man is dementia man.
But anyway, Greg Abbott goes on to say, "Today, Texas agreed to a contract with companies to oversee construction of the border wall once again." So Greg Abbott is single-handedly building the wall again that Trump was building until Biden cancelled it. And he says, "They will quickly work to begin building the wall. Tomorrow I sign a law that increases border security funding to $3 billion. We're trying to fix Biden's failure." So...
good man.
Yeah.
I mean, it looks like the people on the borders of the empire or something, essentially holding back the oncoming like storm. Like the Texans and their governor being the guy who's basically keeping back loads and loads of people. You have no idea where they're from. You have no idea what their intentions are. You have no idea if you can get rid of them. And they're the ones keeping the wall there, or at least trying to. And yet you have the guys in the capital in Washington. Just being like, oh, just let them come. Just let them come. We won't even deport them.
I know. It's absurd that there's even a debate, really. Surely, if you want people to come into your country at all, if you're left or right wing, you want them to go through legal channels so you know who they are. Because, of course...
unless you're an anarchist.
Well, yeah.
But apparently, the anarchist position is one that the Democrats subscribe to these
days. I mean, I think Democrats seem to forget that the drug cartels in Mexico are no joke, and having people like that in your country is the last thing you want.
I mean, if you want to be... if you're a part of ISIS, for example, blowing up somewhere in Iraq isn't as good as blowing up somewhere in America. So they'll no doubt be trying to get through that wall as well. I mean, if you can get from Haiti there, there's nothing going to be stopping you from getting from the Middle East to Mexico.
Of course, there is the fact that the people from Haiti... it's not particularly a nice country. They're not going to be bringing some of the best values with them either. So even if they are not terrorists and just normal people,
there's still also cultural problems all around.
Yes, exactly. So there's also Texan landowners having to rise up as well and sort things out for themselves. So apparently more than 120 landowners who live near the US-Mexico border have agreed to let the state of Texas put up a temporary fence on their border on their property. So they're actually having physical borders put up on their own private property just to keep them out. That's the extent to which. Yeah.
I mean, literally doing their part. I mean, fair enough.
Well, you've got to respect them, but I think there's also a certain amount of self-interest there because there was lots of crime, supposedly, was there. But of course, they are doing a service to everyone else as well. So they say, as of Wednesday, 123 people, most of whom live in the Valverde County, have consented to allow an 8-foot-tall barbed wire metal fence to be erected at the edge of their property, according to a senior advisor to Governor Greg Abbott. 82 of the 123 people identified have signed an agreement with the state's military department, which is overseeing the process. So it's coming to the point where private citizens have to work with local government to prevent this.
Because the federal government's just left.
Yeah. I mean, there's no leadership here. They're not trying to fix the problem. In fact, they're pretty much denying it even exists and sticking their head in the sand. So getting the go-ahead from landowners will immediately allow the state to begin securing what is a vulnerable spot and its 1,250-mile shared border with Mexico. The remote region of South Central Texas, known by federal border authorities as the Del Rio region, has the third highest total of illegal immigration nationwide, with 144,500 encounters of illegal immigrants between February and July, which is a massive number. That is...
it's huge.
I know. It's difficult to get your head around how many people that is. And that's just in one area of Texas. So I think that like kind of brings home the scale of the problem a little bit, if the video wasn't already enough. So of course, the decision to get landowners' permission was driven by the residents themselves as well, and the administration, as in the governor's administration.
Not Biden's.
Yes, just help them do so, which is exactly what local government should be doing, helping people do things which are fixing their own problems.
Right. But this is a federal problem, the federal government.
Oh yeah, well... in the absence of that help, I don't blame the people for having to do it themselves. So Ted Cruz also went down to the border. So let's see what he had to say about the whole thing.
I'm here in Del Rio, Texas, September 16th. I'm underneath the bridge. Behind me, 10,503 people. This is a crisis that is unfolding. It's a man-made crisis. Just over a week ago, there were fewer than 1,000 people here under the bridge, averaging between 700 and 1,000. Then, on September 8th, the Biden administration made a decision to cancel deportation flights back to Haiti. The vast majority of these illegal immigrants crossing in Del Rio are from Haiti. When they made that decision 8 days ago, the 700 to 1,000 people who were here discovered they could stay. They pulled out their cell phones. They called their friends. They called their family. And 8 days later, 700 people became 10,503. This is a disaster, and it is a man-made disaster. It is the result of political decisions, and Joe Biden could end this tomorrow by simply following the law and reinstating the deportation flights back.
Ted Cruz is, of course, spot on there.
100% correct.
Yes.
Entirely man-made, and that man is Biden.
Sorry about the audio and video quality, but it was pulled from Twitter. He only posted it there. But the fact that you could hardly even hear him over the crowd kind of indicates just the sheer amount of people there, that he was talking right next to the camera. They were just in the background and you could hardly even hear him. But Ted Cruz is also right that it's gone up to 10,000 now. It was only 8,000 yesterday at about midday. And by yesterday evening when Ted Cruz filmed that, it's already at 10,000. So who knows what it's at the minute. I think there was an article up by ABC which confirmed this. I think this went up about 4 a.m. UK time. So this was early in the morning for us. But it backs up Cruz's account that about 10,000 people are there. So it's only going to balloon further. And of course, he's very much right to be saying it is all Biden's fault. So supposedly, ABC says the CBP apprehended just over 208,000 people at the southern border in August, which is down from about 4,000 from July, according to federal data. And apparently, the CBP made just 50,000 apprehensions at the southern border in August 2020 when Trump was in office. So even ABC is making comparisons to Trump and how much things were better then. Mm. And that's just how you know how bad it's really getting.
Wish we could turn back time to the good old days. I mean, literally. I mean, every single day it's turning into this, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It's just this new crisis. Oh, how did that happen? Biden did a thing, entirely bureaucratic, entirely man-made, and now we have a man-made problem yet again. And he could fix it like that.
Exactly.
That was the best point made by Ted Cruz in that video, I think. Mm-hmm. Literally all he has to do is sign a bit of paper and say, yeah, I'll send it back to Haiti.
That's and then simple. They'd all disappear.
Yeah, the entire problem would evaporate overnight.
Mm-hmm.
And because you won't do that, well, then they're there, aren't they? So, yeah, absolutely correct them to be blamed on him. I wonder what the position of the Mexican government is on all this. Because I imagine they have the same thing that we have with the French, which is the French don't want them, so they keep sending them over to Britain and refuse to take them back. I imagine the Mexican government's doing the same thing.
I'm sure they probably view it as America has more money than us to get rid of them, therefore leave it to be America's problem, right?
Yeah, but also, gringos. You know. I mean, I don't blame them. You know, if you were the Mexican president, that's what you'd do. You'd also be trying to just hock them off to the Americans.
Mm-hmm.
Which, yeah, it's up to the American president to fix that. He's the one with the power in that relationship, and if he won't, his fault.
Yeah.
That's just on a general sense, but on the specific sense, just sign a bit of paper.
Mm-hmm.
Sign a bit of paper. Send them back to Haiti.
This is undeniably something that Biden has created, and is a horrible failure on his part.
Mm. Anyway, just on to Islam. He's Islamophobic. According to Islamists as well, that's the best part of this story, which is the Islamists say that Islam is Islamophobic.
How does that even work?
I know, right? So to help make this make sense, we're going to turn to a outlet called The Tab. Bristol Tab here.
Yeah, I've talked about that one. Heard about that one, yeah.
So here's the article. Bristol law lecturer under fire from Bristol Islamic Society over Islamophobic remarks. What did he say? They claim Professor Stephen Greer used Charlie Hebdo massacre as evidence of Islam's stance on freedom of speech. Yes.
How can they deny?
Dum-dums.
Yeah.
Like, they blasphemed against the prophets, so they killed the people in Charlie Hebdo. And that's an example of Islam not being very tolerant of criticism of the prophet. Mm-hmm. It doesn't even just stop there. I mean, you could go for Samuel Paty, Kurt Westergaard, or what was it, Theothango, the guy who got stabbed to death in Denmark. I mean, Denmark's learned this fair and square.
Even if we're not talking about criminal things, like whenever there's a discussion about blasphemy laws and things like that in the UK, they're always trotting out some imam who's just like, yes, Islam is very clear about this.
Death to those who disbelieve. And it's like, well, death to those who blaspheme, not disbelieve. Although, if you leave the religion, also death. Very tolerant religion. But if you want to know about the Tab, the reason I'm mentioning that I have a burning passion for hatred against the Tab, if we go to the next link here, so this is an article on lotuses.com about racism throughout our institutions. If you could scroll down, so I want to get to a bit that says ad for inclusivity internship at the Tab. So it's right down, keep going, until you see the Tab's logo. So the Tab put up an internship. Keep going. There's a thing for the Tab. So then they have an internship in which they say BAME only background can apply. So you have to be BAME to apply for the internship.
Which,
see it there?
Isn't that against our so-called equality law?
Yeah,
it?
It's illegal, but on paper. In de facto reality.
Well, yeah, it doesn't get enforced.
Government doesn't care, do they? Police are literally woke. So why don't they do anything?
Almost all of the time, if you contact them and just remind them that it's illegal, they will immediately change it. We had this with a sort of job advertisement where they're like, we're only hiring women.
Wait,
and we just messaged them just like, yeah, it's that is illegal, by the way. And magically, overnight, the job opening is open to all.
I think Ranveer was bullying GCHQ over that. I assume that's what you're referencing. But anyway, if we scroll down a little bit, just so you can see this properly, so you can see applications for the Tab. Inclusivity internship, which is available this year to students and writers only from BAME backgrounds. You have to be BAME. You have to be a BAME. I love how that also just
that word is also banned as well.
Yeah, I love this commenter underneath that I featured as well, which is great. He responds with, please could you let me know what percentage of my DNA needs to be of non-European origin to qualify for this role, or is it based on skin color alone? Don't know. Well, you ask the Tab, I guess. But anyway, let's go back to this racist institution. The Tab, literally. I mean, literally racist. They said you have to be a certain skin tone to work for them, and if you're not that skin tone, get out of here, boy. Like, that's their stance, not mine. So they're upset about this totally Islamophobic man. So what's going on here? So they say that BRISOC, so that's Bristol Islamic Society, very much sounds like INGSOC.
I was just thinking that, actually.
So BRISOC is taking action over a number of complaints made against Professor Stephen Greer of the law school due to his reported use of discriminatory remarks and Islamophobic comments. I love how they're taking action. They're the ones complaining. What are you? Anyway, so law students reported that Professor Greer frequently expresses views in his classes that can be deemed Islamophobic, bigoted, and divisive. Oh, no, not division. Oh, it's almost like that's what all politics is. Division. Point. The whole thing. BRISOC says Professor Greer provided justification for the Chinese government policy of targeting of Uyghur Muslims by stating that, quote, if a particular piece of legislation impacts disproportionately against a group, it looks superficially like discrimination. Okay, that's the part of the quote. And then they do that thing where you do like open brackets, dot, 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 close brackets.
Mm-hmm.
And we're gonna take them very seriously. There's no way they quote-minded this next bit. This is the case in China with Muslims in re-education camps. No way he said that. Give me the full quote. liars. I mean, just blatant-faced liars. No one believes that for a minute, that that's an accurate quote. So, Bree Sock demands that Professor Stephen Greer apologises to all Muslim students, all of them, just even the ones that weren't even there, making it clear that his remarks are an opinion rather than objective truth. Oh, then it'll be okay, then. if he actually honestly believed that, the re-education camps in China are good, and that was just his opinion, that'd be fine. Muslims have no problem with that whatsoever at Bristol's Islamic Society. Okay, not true.
I would doubt that, yeah.
Yeah. They also demand that, quote, material is removed from his teaching and the module. That's very Islamic, shutting down teaching that you don't like. What was that about Charlie Hebdo again? You were saying that they're not happy when people insult Islam and they get killed? Also, they want a firm complaint is being made from... a firm commitment is made from him not to make such a statement in future teaching. So comply with the Sharia. They're literally threatening him. It's like, look, you will delete what you've said, you will apologise, and then you will make a commitment to obey anything we say at the Islamic Society of Bristol. Again, Islamic Society of Bristol.
The fact that exists at all is bad enough.
Man. Like, the memes are true. They continue, because of course that never ends. There's always the thing with extremists. If you say, what can I do to make you happy, they'll give you a list of demands. If you agree to them, what's followed? Another list of the demands.
You can only teach Sharia law in your law school.
So they continue, if these demands are not met, Bree Sock asked the university to consider future disciplinary action, including suspension and or dismissal of the teacher for showing that Charlie Hebdo showed that Islam's not very tolerant. What a bad man.
So terrible.
But again, the whole thing about like, oh, they're upset that Charlie Hebdo shows that we're not intolerant. Also, if you ever say that, we're going to kick you out of the university because we're the group of tolerance right here. When asked in a video posted at the University of Bristol Law School if the Prevent Duty, a Counterterrorism and Security Act passed in 2015 is, quote, racist, Islamophobic and discriminatory. Yeah, it's always the buzzwords of the day, isn't it?
It's always in the same order as well, have you noticed?
Yeah, it's always racist first.
Mm-hmm.
Greer responded, the Prevent strategy includes all forms of terrorism, but the fact that most of those that had come to its attention are Muslims is simply a reflection that jihadi terrorism is the principal terrorist threat the UK currently faces.
That's exactly what our terror experts say.
Demonstrably bloody true. I mean, just look at the terrorist attacks that are successful or unsuccessful. Overwhelmingly, they're jihadi. They are not of the far right or the far left in the UK, although there are those elements, of course. Bree Sock say that in their statement that these examples expose a clear lack of depth of knowledge about Islam. Do they? Or are you just obviously lying? And show an institutional failing to understand how this rhetoric will cause harm. Pathetic. But you can see this being a openly racist outlet. Of course, they want to give coverage to the Bristol Islamic Society, so they want to help them out. Because fellow brothers in the race war, I guess. So if we carry on, there's also Al Jazeera, who tried to give cover to this group and big them up and give them more coverage of being the good guys. And so in here, they reference, in a section discussing Islam and human rights, Greer listed freedom of expression as a key challenge to Islam, which highlighted that to insult in Islam is punishable by death. So there should be a slide here, yeah, this one, the 4.1. So this is the disgusting slide. Disgusting, disgusting, needs to be fired for this. What did he put? 4.1 key human rights challenges for the Muslim world. Number one, freedom of expression. Insult to Islam punishable by death. E.G. Charlie Hebdo. What's wrong with that?
Perfectly fine to me.
Also, just look up Saudi Penal Code. Also, freedom of thought, conscience, and religion. Apostasy punishable by death in Islam. Yep. Mm-hmm. And also, again, multiple Muslim countries backing him up on that, standing by and being like, base bro. And he's like, no, get your hand off me. Like, not with you people, criticizing you. Position of non-Muslims and other minorities in Islamic states. Only Muslims are full citizens. Yep, you can see this throughout history and in the Muslim world. Some rights are limited to citizens. That's definitely true.
Yes.
Are you really going to disavow that? Position of women. Polygamy, divorce, custody of children on divorce, inequality of legal testimony, physical chastisement by husbands, dress, women who wear hijab less likely to work outside of the home or be involved in higher education. Of course, not just limited to the hijab, also the niqab or the burqa, because it gets worse and worse, because it always does. And then had punishments, unlawful intercourse, false accusations of unlawful intercourse, highway robbery, drinking alcohol. And yes. So this is very, very accurate description of the problems with the Muslim world to a liberal in the West. And Bristol Islamic Society are like, we resent that remark. So
they're just proving him right in every point, isn't it?
This is so like nothing burger, right? And the reason I'm going over this is because it gets worse and worse. Like, you think there's some pissed off like students, right? But of course, it never ends there, does it? So if we carry on, we go to their dumb petition in which they're like, get rid of the bad man. He said that Islam is Islamic, which is Islamophobic. That's where I get the title from. So they say in here, the University of Bristol is an educational institution that is committed to decolonizing the curriculum and ensuring that the criteria is inclusive in scope and delivery. We hope that they will act on and speak up for the culture they want to push forward. Islamic culture. As in, censoring anyone who disagrees with Islam. That's what they're demanding. They're like, the university signed up for this. You signed up to decolonize the curriculum. This is what this means. It does. Thanks for the admission.
Isn't it just a different kind of colonization?
How can it not be? Has Bristol not always been Islamic?
Well,
back to the 13th century, I'm sure it was. Who would want to disagree with that? Ingsoc. I mean, literal Ingsoc over here is upset. Anyway, so let's move on from their dumb position, because the thing here is it didn't end there. Of course it didn't. So it carried on, and now he's lost his position. Not because he's done anything wrong. Literally, the university said he didn't do anything wrong, okay, but they still cancelled his course.
Right, so he's just like, yeah, you didn't do anything wrong, but also, yeah, you can't teach that anymore.
Yes.
You haven't done anything wrong, we're going to punish you anyway.
Yes. So here's the headline. University clears Don of being anti-Islam, but then cancels his course anyway, because screw him. So he's done nothing wrong, but it's cancelled. Why is it cancelled? Because it's got nothing wrong with it.
Right. If it was a self-respecting institution, it should have kicked out the students who are complaining in the first place. Mm. If university's actually meant to teach people, maybe people who are against teaching people things should be removed.
But also the logic of the people complaining is Islam is Islamophobic. I mean, do you hear yourself? Do you hear the people talking to you? Anyway, so in here they say, meanwhile, Professor Greer said he had to flee the family home amid fears for his safety following the campaign against him. Oh, fantastic. We really are becoming France, aren't we? I'm sure we can get far more Samuel Patties in the coming years. What a wonderful world. He came across a stranger loitering outside our home shortly after the news of his controversy emerged. There was not controversy that emerged. The Bristol Islamic Society started throwing their toys at the pram because he dared to point to the Islamic world and say, that's different. He didn't necessarily say that's bad. He just said, that's different.
Mm-hmm. I mean, he's pointing out objective characteristics of Muslim societies that if you went to the society and was just like, well, what do you do to unbelievers or people who speak ill of Islam? They'd be like, they will tell you. They won't care. They won't be ashamed. Yeah.
I mean, the Taliban are not like pretending. You just look at their memes.
It's not just the Taliban, but lots of Islamic countries as well.
Sure, yeah. I mean, Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, Iran, Jordan. I mean, we could go on forever, couldn't we? Anyway, so he came across someone loitering outside his home as soon as the controversy emerged, as the Islamic Society decided to make the controversy, adding, they gave an implausible excuse and left. Was it just coincidence, or was it... how do you read that word? Rickenwright? I don't know. He's a professor. He uses words I can't read. So we'll never know. My family and I were, of course, very rattled by this. I would be. Taking no chances, my wife and I fled our home to stay elsewhere for safety for several days. Although a formal investigation came down in favor of Professor Greer, he received an email from academic chiefs later this week, which said that the module on Islam, China, and the Far East was being dropped. So Muslim students would not feel that their religion was being singled out or in any way othered by the class material. The module is called Islam, China, and the Far East. And they're upset that the Muslims are being singled out in the module about Islam. Talking about Islam in Islamic terms is Islamophobic, and you're singling out Muslims by talking a module on Islam. I'm sorry, but like, there couldn't be a more transparent case of someone just trying to censor academic teaching in the UK. Mm-hmm. There is nothing here. Nada. They have nothing on their side whatsoever other than just don't say it. Just don't say that we do things that are Islamic. Like, well, it's a course on Islam, you dumbos. And yet his course still gets cancelled in Bristol. I mean, just down the road from here.
Mm-hmm.
Lovely Britain.
It's ridiculous. Also, the word you couldn't pronounce, I think it was reconnoitre, which means like
sounds French
recon,
to me.
Right.
Yeah. No, not for me. Anyway, of the 697 cases taken on by Prevent last year, 73% were those from the far-right extremism, and also 30% were Islamist. And this is something I believe you actually looked into previously, which is that Prevent were overwhelmingly dealing with jihadist terrorism.
Yes.
And then because of pissed-off Islamic societies like this one, who have nothing but Islamism behind them by the looks of it, They decided that they were investigating more far-right terrorism, and they couldn't find any. Mm-hmm. So they started investigating pensioners.
Yeah, the head of the Cobra Intelligence Group, which is like the main anti-terror organisation in the UK that provides emergency meetings with the Prime Minister, he was just like, yeah, this is obviously just political. Obviously, like, the threat of the far-right is not comparable to Islamic people. It's just political pressure and the fact that there's lots of old people. And then he actually relates it to old imams as well. It's just like, well, if they're old, maybe they're just imams trying to radicalize young people. And that's just like, yes.
But also the point, right, though, is like, if it's not political, why are overwhelmingly the suspects for the far right pensioners? Mm-hmm. Why is that not the case with any other terrorists?
Scary pensioners.
Yeah, they're not. Anyway, so the guy, Stephen Greer, he's actually written an article about this on conservativewomen.com, which I love. Sorry, it's conservativewomen.co.uk, but I just love that he's like, yeah, I've got to go to conservative women to write about this. Which, I mean, no diss on conservative women, I mean, great outlet, but you know, I just find it funny. Anyway, so he writes, lies, distortion, intimidation, this toxic campaign to brand me Islamophobic. So he writes in here, a series of questions at the end of this, because he lays out what we've laid out. And the questions are not bad, and he hints at legal action. Why have there not been disciplined for victimization, intimidation, and harassment 7 months on, referring to the people who have been intimidating him for daring to say that Islam is Islamic? How are the express reasons for the removal of the Islam, China, and Far East topic from the syllabus consistent with the university's statutory obligation to defend academic freedom? Will the university support the law school's decision or the result of its own inquiry, which is that he did nothing wrong? In the quest for satisfactory answers, a solicitor has been appointed. And the reason I found out about this story was thanks to the Free Speech Union, who I'm signed up to, who sent me an email. They send emails every Friday or whatever with a bunch of stuff. And he seems to be in contact with them. And yeah, they're going to fight back on this, which is good to see.
Yeah, good.
Because
roll over and just take it. It should make them pay for their cancelling of him, really.
Yeah, and also if they get their way, well, literally, like, what they're asking for is that you shouldn't be able to teach the Quranic interpretation of Islam. I mean, remember, that's how foundational we're getting to this, as Islam within universities, because it offends Muslims, because it makes them look bad. Because Islam looks bad when quoted, you can't teach it. That's the demand. That's what's being asked of you.
It's so absurd, isn't it?
Yeah, and the thing about all of this is it really reminded me of a really joke story that came out of Turkey. I don't know if you remember this, The Economist. Turkey investigates those who object to Islamophobia. Sorry, those who object to homophobia. For Islamophobia. If you object to homophobia, you're an Islamophobe in Turkey. And if you object to Islam in Britain, you're also an Islamophobe. I mean, if you wanted more proof that the term Islamophobia is just a cudgel which to beat morons, then this is it.
I mean, there aren't many religions where they've got their own term where you're like, Christianophobic.
Yeah, it doesn't get
used. Catholophobic.
Exactly. I mean, this is why in law, if you wanted to do hate laws for some reason, then you could do anti-Muslim bigotry, as Majid Nawaz gives an example. Mm-hmm. They don't want to use that. They want to use this because it can be used for anything. It's literally just shutting down anyone who criticizes us. So in here, they say, the story, Ali Erbas, the country's top religious official, proclaimed that Islam condemned homosexuality, quote, because it brought illness and generational decay. Erdogan, the president, and his supporters rushed to the cleric's defense, with one of his flacks saying that Mr. Abbas could not be faulted for voicing divine judgment. Another accused his critics of Islamophobia. An attack against the head of the Dinat is an attack against the state, Mr. Erdogan himself warned. Literally, if you have a problem with homophobia, you're an Islamophobe. Mm-hmm. And we have the same example mm-hmm. in the UK now, which is if you have a problem with Islam, or even just quote Islam, you're also an Islamophobe, because it makes Islam look bad. I can't get that right.
Can't believe it's got to this point.
Yeah. But all the best to Mr. Greer and the Free Speech Union if they're working with him or in contact with him, which they seem to be. Yeah. Screw the University of Bristol. Don't send your kids there. If you are there, make a big fuss about this because that's the right thing to do. And also, throughout the country, be aware that they're up to this.
Absolutely.
Let's move to the video comments.
Hello there, Callum. So, this is a little late, but this is the book that I was asking if you have ever read it before. This woman right here, she did go into the Soviet archives and got to see a lot of things behind the scenes that were very interesting in both a crazy way as well as a dark, humorous way. I highly recommend reading it. I was going to ask, for English socialism in 1984, what is it exactly? Because we know German socialism was race socialism. Bolshevik socialism was class socialism. What is English socialism? What is the separation there?
There's no such thing as English socialism, is what I'd like to say. But we probably have our own strain, don't we?
Maybe it used to exist. I don't see it within politics at all anymore. I mean, people like to call back to Tony Benn or Harold Wilson or whoever else and be like, you know, English socialism as the Labour Party movement, mm-hmm. right? Used to be a thing that's separate and different. I've always been very skeptical of this. I've never really looked into it too much. But in modern politics, modern Labour Party, nothing. Nothing is entirely consistent with the German branch or international mm-hmm. view of the thing.
Although there is a certain American tinge to a lot of the Labour Party stuff, particularly their objections about things like race. It just sounds like it's an American import. It doesn't really apply here.
Critical race theory being the best yes. way of looking at this. Or wokeness being mm-hmm. an entirely American import. Of the books, Gulag, I hadn't heard of that one. I haven't read it. I kind of got bored with Gulag Archipelago because I just... It wasn't even the depressingness nature of it. It was
That's
just...
what put me off, because you borrowed it from me, didn't you? Yeah. And I didn't... You got to about the same point that I got to, but I gave up because I was reading it on a nice sunny day, and I was just like, I feel really, really miserable and depressed about humanity, and it's ruining the nice weather, so I'm going to close it and yeah. pretend it didn't happen.
Reading about, like, guys in the Gulag having to go and take dumps in the middle of the freezing winter, and then being beaten to death. Mm.
Yeah. Making old men stand in the corner... for like 3 days straight without any food or water, and then when they fall over, you shoot them.
Yeah.
Just being cruel for cruelty's sake, and it's too much.
I got mad with his translations. I didn't like the way he write, which is, you know, maybe ironic, but not enough for me. Anyway, but the other book there of Animal Farm, should we do a book club on that? That sounds fun.
Yeah, I mean,
do you do Animal Farm or not?
What do you mean?
Well, you did Wigan Pier.
I did, yeah. Wigan Pier was good, though. I mean, we talked a lot about Orwell. And I've got Animal Farm at home, so I could always reread it. Mm. I read it when I was quite young, so I can't really remember all the details of it.
I must mention, there's the 1984 one we did. I don't think I mentioned it in the book club, but there's this fat socialist on YouTube who made a long video complaining about Jordan Peterson, saying that Orwell shows that socialism is bad. And he's like, no, Orwell was a socialist. And I was like, right, okay, that's a pathetic response for one. And then he's like, no, 1984 wasn't about socialism in general. It was about the Britain during the war against the Nazis. Because Orwell worked at the BBC, and it's like, this is the most pathetic response I've ever seen. Like, I said it to Michael, we just have a laugh at some of these people, because it's so pathetic.
You mean, when Britain was at war with the National Socialists?
Yes.
Oh, right, yeah,
his criticism was like, oh yeah, Ingsoc is meant to represent how there was censorship in wartime Britain. It's like, no.
I mean, obviously, Orwell's letters and stuff about that kind of already disproves that. He didn't just write books, he did write other things.
It also just looks like the socialist parties of the world, like mirror image. So mm-hmm. the idea it represents Britain is obvious.
Of course.
BS. Let's move on.
Dan, you're right. That is a shame. That is such a shame. The problem is, though, this is not our culture. This is not something we can be proud of as a culture and a nation. And without a shared culture, there is no shared identity except for these very superficial things such as skin color and sexuality, and that's a massive problem. I grew 2 cup sizes after getting the Pfizer vaccine.
Is that a humble brag? Okay. On the Weebery? The idea that you can use Japanese literature to replace something in... the West doesn't make any sense.
I do enjoy Western literature because I have more frames of reference, but when I go to Japanese stuff, it's normally because of how far removed it is from the culture. It's very strange to me and interesting, but it's more like, it's kind of like going on holiday. Like you don't want to necessarily be there for the rest of
you. You wouldn't rebuild Western civilization on a foreign culture. It doesn't make any sense.
Mm-hmm.
She's absolutely right. Let's go to the next one.
Hello, friends. I just wanted to let you know that I had this made on Fiverr for 70 quids. That's an homage to Jordan Peterson. Also, while I was listening to the last audio article by Josh, I fastened this to the ceiling, so now my girlfriend's going to be happy. More or all articles in audio format would be really nice, because that's the only way I can consume everything you write. So, in advance, thank you very much.
I like how you framed a picture of Jordan Peterson while listening to my article about the psychological impacts of lockdown. I appreciate that appreciation of psychologists. And it was a cool picture as well.
I love how he said he was putting up the lights to make his girlfriend happy. It's like, not for himself at all. It very much reminds me, you know, those memes.
That's all home improvements, pretty much. Like, if you're a man, you're just living in... You just got, like, one chair, one plate.
Like, you've seen the meme, haven't you? Where it's like, it's a TV... like camping chair, yeah. plate on the ground. Men really live like this. Yeah.
That sounds like my apartment, to be honest.
Well, you got more guitars, so.
Well, yeah.
So, but also,
my only real possession is just loads of guitars.
If I did get to meet Jordan Peterson, I'd love to ask him, though, of what he thinks of the fact that he's kind of... He's gained this kind of appreciation that people usually get when they're dead.
Yeah, I know. Well, he's got such veneration, hasn't he? But I imagine it's because of the impacts his teachings have had already. Like, normally people only place that level of significance after someone's died because they gain kind of like a mystique or mysterious nature. You see a lot with music and bands, if particularly if someone commits suicide and they're a musician, all of a sudden their music skyrockets in popularity for some reason. It's really morbid and bizarre, actually.
Oh God, what a terrible argument for like young musicians.
Yeah, don't do that. But it's better to be alive.
But just like, it is, it's not just me, right? Like, you know, that's an example in which you have him quoted and, you know, mm-hmm. like a painting of him that makes him sort of look like he's from something in the past. But he's still alive. Mm-hmm. You don't usually have that. I'm sure someone's got a statue of him somewhere as well. Yeah. Not a diss on him either. I just don't want to make of it. Let's go for the next one.
I'm not going to defend anime, but I wonder if you could think about it a bit differently. Anime isn't a genre. It's an animated film just like we have in the West, but from a Japanese culture. Some are good, some aren't. A disadvantage is that it often seems weird or unrelatable to Westerners. An advantage is that this culture contains new ideas and art styles to draw upon. And it often contains more mature themes, something that Western animation forgoes, almost always being child-friendly with the trademark Disney villain death. Imagine a Lord of the Rings-style animation with love, danger, and even death. You'd never get that from a Western film giant today. Remember, this is weird stuff, too.
Okay. I suppose I'm just going to be very orcs about this. In the same way that you like America, I just don't like anime. Not interested. So, not for me.
I mean, it's okay, but sometimes I just prefer to watch something that is more, I don't know, more grounded in reality. I that's not necessarily a disrespect, it's just my own preference.
No, but it's usually like, I want to make it, you know, I like America hat, or it's you know, our team kind of thing. It's just, I hate anime. There's our team.
Lotus Eaters coming at you with another anime recommendation. One Piece, the most popular best-selling manga of all time. I think the part that'll interest you the most is when Luffy's trying to break his brother out of jail. Deep in the underground prison of Impel Down, Luffy runs into Iva, the queen of Transvestite Island. Iva has eaten the Hora Hora no Mi fruit, which allows him to control people's hormones, making it so that he can turn men into women and women into men. Isn't anime great?
Is this a parody of the video comments recommending anime? Because I hope it is. The half of me is like, he might be taking it seriously. I don't know. Anyway, next.
My whole point in the series about people not understanding the justification for our principles like natural rights is that since religion is no longer the vanguard, we need to reinvigorate the argument for why these principles are good. Systems like natural law are founded upon reason, reasoning which is being lost in our society and is allowing them to be subverted. As George Orwell has said, the first duty of intelligent man is to restate the obvious. However, I must concede that Harari is right in one regard. You are more likely to convince someone by appealing to a commonly shared myth rather than reason alone. This must come with the appeal to myths such as culture, as Tim has said, and national identity.
Yeah, I very much agree. Me and Hugo did a contemplations about rights, natural rights, and he kind of, before we even started talking about it, I didn't really know what natural rights were. I just thought that people were just like, yeah, nature gives you rights. But no, it's not that. It's that you have these biological things that need to be, satisfied, and therefore it's not for the state to infringe on those and things like that. And there are lots of good arguments that we talk about that I seem to be not phrasing very well in that episode.
Made me think, though, because he's saying that religion gives the shared society some mythical points in which they can come together and whatnot. And Carl sort of made this argument for, let's say, a secular version of this, in which he wants to talk about on an English level. You know, there are mythical parts of England that make up what being English is and what England is and all the rest of it. I just think in my mind, like, if you could lay out, like, the mythical world of wokeness, like, literally, like, the myths they believe. Because it is. I mean, it is all just mythical. But
I think those two things are using the word myth differently. And I think we need to be careful about how we use it, because...
What does it mean, fake?
Well, it kind of implies it a little bit, doesn't it? If you're saying something's mythological, you think of, like, dragons and griffins and stuff like that. Whereas a lot of things that bring people together aren't made up. They're very tangible and real things. And I think by using the word... mythology or a myth. It's doing it a bit of a disservice sometimes where...
No, because a myth, it doesn't mean fiction. They are two different things. So
I feel like it does evoke it, though, a little bit.
Okay, well, we're not doing that. So, you know, whenever we define the word myth before the conversation, it's not that it's fake, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking in my head, like, the myths of wokeness would be an interesting read. I don't know, it sounds like something Titania McGrath would write, you know?
Peterson's approach, using the word stories instead of myths, is quite good, I think, because a story can be true. And
so are myths.
I'll take your word for it.
Okay.
In the immortal words of Louis C.K., boys F things up. Girls are F'd up. Do they really expect anything less from women on social media?
I haven't heard that quote from Louis C.K., but I feel like we should keep our mouths closed about this.
Yeah. The more like people who've been married a long time I hang out with and they talk about their wives... it is interesting how, like, when women get older, they seem to, like, have difficulty making friends with other women more than when they were younger,
mm-hmm.
which is strange, because, you know, it's a female world anyway in that regard, which is also
I think brutal. As people get older, they're more kind of set in their ways and certain of themselves, and when you're younger, you're more willing to kind of go along with the group, aren't you?
Yeah, so but male bonding with strangers, like, a male mm-hmm. bonding with strangers is, you know, seems easier than females bonding with strangers.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they have a bunch of
I think we're a lot more tolerant of someone being a bit more verbally confrontational. So someone can call you like a name and you'd kind of laugh about it.
Yeah.
Whereas that doesn't really happen in between women, does it? Not to the same extent, certainly.
Yeah, women use, personality, social destruction rather than physical destruction or whatever Peterson likes to say.
Yeah, I know what you're referring to, yeah.
Anyway, let's move on.
Carl, I, among other things, happen to be a knife maker. And I have been deprived of my workshop for almost a year, but I now finally have access to a space that I can set my shop back up again. So expect to have some knife making videos in the next few months. Anyway.
That's some good stuff.
That sounds fantastic. Mm. I know Carl's going to love that as well.
I've been looking to get a decent camping knife because it's one of those things where you can use it in the place of like, anything, as long as you have a decent knife to go camping with, you can like use it to cut wood and stuff like that. All you need is to hammer it into the wood, and as long as it's good enough quality, it's basically invaluable.
Mm.
And as someone who does a lot of it, it's very useful.
I know in France, I remember because I went skiing there once, they have like a bunch of knives you can buy in these stores. Apparently, mm-hmm. it's like a rite of passage for French boys to get a knife that's like handmade.
It's like getting a sword, isn't it? Back in the medieval times,
yeah.
Like
to keep it or something.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if they have that in America.
Hey, Lotus Eaters, Tony D and Little Joan here on Kings Highway in Haddonfield, New Jersey. Kings Highway was named after King George III. This is a colonial town from that era. And behind me is the Indian King Tavern, where a group of based, beer-soaked farmers plotted the overthrow of their tyrant.
What did he do? Didn't do nothing. Literally just pay your tax. But I do actually quite like the architecture and the look of
it looks
the colonial
really nice,
parts of America.
Good to see you out in the field as well.
I do love that it's the Indian King Tavern as well. So they're going to try and cancel that.
Yeah, I was just thinking that as well.
If you are local to that pub, mate, mm-hmm. just, you know, be the guy that makes sure it remains.
Despite its rebellious history, rebelling against our wonderful and great empire.
That's a good idea. Now, I'm going to be the one that changes the name. I'm going to buy the pub and they just call it the King's Pub. Just get rid of the image.
It's going to be like in the UK where every pub is named after the king or queen or something like that.
Yeah, King's Ed. Well, mm-hmm. that sounds like we beheaded him, but anyway.
King's Arms.
I could just go to call it George III Arms or something. And just British flag outside.
The King George.
Literally just British pub food. Anyway, let's go to the next one.
AOL used to have like various little chat rooms and stuff. And so like there would be a limit of how many people can be in that chat room at a time. It would be like, I don't know, there was like 20 or something chat rooms probably for like each area basically. And they were named like Alpha, Beta, Charlie, or whatever it was. And there was a limit to how many people could be in there. Like 25 or 30 or something like that. And then at the very end, there was the anime one that you never went into because it was full of really weird people. But I thought that would be super cute if you could have that like on the site. This is Little Winston. He's a bundle of energy.
That abruptly ends. It's just like, doggy.
I like the dogs and cats, but I think the the idea of having a chat room and stuff with the way the UK law works, I think we're liable for anything that's said.
We are a publisher, not
and therefore it'd be difficult for us to moderate it in a way which yeah. would make us not liable for whatever people say on there.
By the way,
so that makes it difficult.
I really like the Fallout Bobby. Was it the Bobby
Bobblehead?
Bobblehead. There we are. I forgot the name. Yeah, mm-hmm. I wanted. Did you get like the collection edition or whatever? Because I've got like the Fallout New Vegas one. And I like the little chips. I've got a platinum chip. It's good.
Anyway. I need to wear my jacket that makes me look like Benny. Yeah. And have...
Just host one of the podcasts. Ring a ding ding. Anyway, let's go to the next one.
Scientists may be looked upon as being authoritative figure. Science is related to authority.
This is not about freedom. The unvaccinated overcrowd our hospitals. This is a pandemic of the unvaccinated.
Come on, man.
Oh, God. Yeah. Thank you for covering up some of those images there, because that's going to be a problem. with the COVID symbol. I saw someone on Twitter, it's Carl Samir, some leftist journo, who tweeted out, what is it, why the F are we letting some minority of the country F everything up for everyone else? And it's just like, literally that could be a Hitler quote, talking about the Jews. I mean, it is ridiculous. So,
oh dear.
Comparisons fairly made.
You need to be a Canadian citizen at least 18 years of age on the day of the election, and you must vote in the riding that you live in. You must provide proof of your identity and your address, or have someone who can prove their identity vouch for you under penalty of law. There is an extensive list of items that are considered valid for this purpose. There is also community organizations that will help people with no fixed address or difficulty with ID to be able to exercise their right to vote. We find out on Monday if Canada is able to avoid the steaming pile of crap that some other unnamed elections have seen.
Hopefully you get rid of Trudeau. I'm keeping my eyes on it.
Also, a question in case you're doing the next one, which is what's the percentage of postal ballots in Canada over time? I'd be interested to see. Mm-hmm. Because I did this for the Americans, and it's for like 1%, 2% or whatever when it's early on. And it kind of grows in like the 90s and whatnot, and it goes up a little bit. I think it goes as high as like 20% in 2016. And then for 2020, it was like 50% of all votes were postal votes.
That's ridiculous.
Skyrockets. Because, of course, just for mm-hmm. COVID. And I'm like, yeah, let's see what happens after that goes back down.
It's funny because in the UK, we don't really have too much of a problem about this. And I only receive, well, we've had cases where it's gone wrong, but
we've not proven cases where it's gone wrong.
Well,
multiple mayors, but multiple councillors.
Everyone who it fixes it is terrible. Like, yeah. They always get caught. that's why I'm not so concerned, because every case where there's shenanigans going on, we're just like, wait a minute.
Yeah,
we find them.
The riggers in the UK are particularly awful. Like the one in Birmingham, they just walked in with carrier bags, like Tesco carrier bags, filled with like mm-hmm. printed ballots that they got themselves. I'm just like, right, okay, yeah, you're Nick's son.
Like reading about the one in Birmingham where they just walk in and the actual councillors that are up for election are just there with all the ballots. Just like, I'm not doing anything.
120% turnout. It's a problem. But then again, I mean, it kind of shows that if they're that brazen about it, how deep is it really?
I mean, I did get a letter recently which was asking me to confirm my... No, I haven't been fixing
Would
elections.
Would you like to come and fix a ballot for the Labour Party?
Yeah, they're just recruiting people to fix the ballots now. But no, I got a letter asking me to confirm my identity because of voting, and they made me confirm my address and go on a website and stuff like that. So we seem to be doing stuff to prevent election fraud, which is... Nice.
Yeah, well, Boris as well, actually. Conservatives deserve praise when they do good things. Did pass through the scheme that we're going to need voter ID in the next general election, mm-hmm. and the ID will also be free if you want it, so the Labour Party can go themselves when they're moaning about, like...
any form of ID? Like, any of the accepted forms, I mean?
Yes, I believe. You can use your driving license, your mm-hmm. passport, but also if you don't have any of them and you don't want to, that's fine. Literally go to, like, the local council or library, and they will give you a specific one for the election mm-hmm. free of charge. So this idea that, like, Black people can't afford it, or trans people are too dumb to know where the library is, as Pink News tried to spin it. Like, no. Just go to hell. So if the Republicans want an idea as well, I mean, if you want to do voter ID, just make it free, and then they have no complaints. Not mm-hmm. valid at all. Not that they did anyway. Let's go to the next one.
I believe Sophie, before my holiday, said that she was annoyed about how the West is so subverted and we don't have any heroic hero stories these days, just subversion and deconstructions of heroes. If only there was a non-subverted country that wrote a heroic story. Maybe even Shadversi on YouTube calling it the modern-day He-Man story. making a story about what it's like to be a hero. If only that just existed. And that's really not coming to me, I'm sorry. I can't think of one.
For anyone listening, it's C.S. Cooper holding up all of his books and showing off, well, there you are. Go to what is it, cscooper.oz or .com? I can't remember.
That's some good promotion, though. Showing and not telling.
Yes. Making a very good point without having to say a word. Let's go to the next one.
What? So, I was thinking, wouldn't the ultimate safe space be a marriage where both parties are fully committed to the relationship and to each other? Balls in your court, progressives. Except we all know that you are deeply, deeply horrible people, and no sane person will ever let their guard down around you.
Oh, I love that he's got fire rates with different names as well. Step snake. Like, if you stepped on the snake, click. Oh, God. What is that gun below it, though? It's like, I don't know what that was at all. I've never seen anything like that.
Like, no, I can't remember. It looked like it was what it looks like.
Like, there's a... Mm-hmm. I can't remember if it's a subreddit or something, but there's some place on the internet that just collects, like, really horrible-looking guns. Mm-hmm. Like, people have made purposely disgustingly-looking guns on purpose. Because there's a lot of, like, My Little Pony.
I don't think that's fair to say that about that one, though.
Oh, no, it was ugly. It was very ugly. But there are some much worse ones. Like, people putting multiple barrels on a gun for no reason.
Never disrespect a man's gun. That's...
Well, I've never seen it before. The one above it is fantastic, and the decorations are beautiful. But mm-hmm. the one below it confuses me. So.
I also like how he was talking about marriage being like a great thing, whilst also filming guns in the background. Just like adds an entirely different context to it. But
how do you keep a marriage stable? Disavow that joke. Let's get to the next one.
Morning, guys. It's day 10. Still no serious communist feelings or child attraction, which is probably good. Because I take my commitments seriously, I'm going to bunk off this morning and I'm heading into London to do a dry run of next week's cigar tasting. So make sure everything's okay for that. I hope some of you can join me on Friday or Saturday next week. And I look forward to the live event. The Sultans of Chatelet have a Teespring store. It's spring.sultansofchatelet.com. You guys can get a discount if you use promo code CommieCarl, because where's your merch?
Being done.
Yeah, it shouldn't be too long now, I don't think.
We've seen like the previews and whatnot, so it looks like it should be good. I still haven't figured out where he is either. Like, because he said to guess where he was with those bars running over the top.
Yeah, I thought it looks like, you know, on the US-Mexico border, they have like little citizen kind of tracks next to the road. It looked like that because they have those little things there. But I don't think it is there because it sounds like he was in Britain, yeah. You never know.
But anyway, I still don't know. Anyway, so let's move on to Andrew Neil. So Andrew, mm-hmm. I'm still disappointed about this. Like with Carl's episode, I was going to be like, well, at least I'm going to try and take some points for Andrew Neil because, you know, try to see, you know, if there's a charitable interpretation mm-hmm. of things. Nothing with this one. I'm sorry, but it was just such a scumbag thing to do. Like just to go out and be like, yeah, stab people in the back who gave up their time and talent to work with me. An awful man.
Yeah. Anyway.
So JJHW says, Andrew Neil exemplifies the old CIA adage that you can buy a journalist for less money than a prostitute, hence the term prestitute.
Prestitute.
Oh, yeah. I think, doesn't that come from India as well? Like, it's
I don't know.
I think it got coined by Modi, like talking about the leftists in India. I may be wrong. Anyway. But I can't remember which book it was as well. There was one of the anti-communist books we did a book club on where they were talking about as a CIA agent, you shouldn't waste your time on the press, or KGB agent, shouldn't you waste your time on the press? These people are political prostitutes. They are beneath you.
They're not even worth influencing.
Yeah, the KGB
what a condemnation.
Thought they were a waste of time. Like, spend your time on conservatives so that you can get some value out of that. I think it might be Yuri Bezmenov, actually, that's talking like that. Anyway, so Ian Iskander says, Andrew Neil wanted GB News to have an appearance of food rather than medicine to take the win and assume the mantle of mainstream authority, but instead it seems determined to continue to behave like a dissident, to remain in AM radio mode even when occupying a top-level soapbox. There are two visions for GB News, one that would have David Starkey as a royal correspondent, food version of GB News, and one that would have him as a pundit, medicine version of GB News. I'm not quite sure I get the food versus medicine example there. To be honest, I'd quite like Starkey as a royal correspondent as well. Be good fun. I imagine he'd have a lot of things to say about the Civil War. But I don't know. Anyway. So Heathcliff Lowen says, Andrew Neil implying that GB News is fake news without specifying a single thing. What a gross shill he is. Yeah, I'm sorry, but that was just disgraceful behaviour.
It's the thing that he helped set up as well. So surely by his own kind of condemnation, he's also tainting himself with the so-called fake news label, right?
It was such a slimy politician thing, of course, to do as well. Yeah. Where he's like, yeah, Fox News is full of fake news and GB News wants to be like Fox News. I'm not saying anything, bro. Hell with you, man. Anyway, Joshua Blythe says Andrew Neil, the coward, is being vague to avoid a defamation liability. That's probably true.
Yeah.
If he wasn't lying, he would be able to give a straightforward answer. I did wonder if he had an NDA as well. I know Binary Surfer mentioned in the Discord yesterday, the Athens Discord, about whether or not he'll have an NDA for the thing. I was expecting him not to talk about GB News at all. I just went on there and asked on them for half an hour. Elthra the Beta says, Fox News deals in conspiracy theories and fake news like open borders, replacement theory, and insurrection by General Milley, and the most secure election ever. Yeah. I mean, just dealing with the stories the leftists won't touch. Let's move on a bit, because running out of time. On the US border, a student of history says, crisis is an understatement. It is reaching a point of catastrophe.
I think that's fair, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, 10,000 people stuck under there.
Yeah, I mean, not only is it really bad for America, of course, I imagine that having lots of people in a place where there's not very many resources, and it's pretty much like southern Texas, right? It's not a particularly hospitable environment for people to be packed in amongst one another. And of course, they're probably all going to make each other ill as well.
Yeah, I wonder how many of them are being vaccinated.
Well, zero. Probably not many, yeah.
Yeah, love my zeros, anyway. So Adam Clayton says, Kamala has the easiest win in the world to solve the border crisis, as border czar. Too bad that would mean admitting Trump was right. Well, she's done it before. Do not come. Do not come. Edward Woodstock, Biden fails to learn from his own mistakes. If you tell them you're not as harsh as Trump, they will take advantage. Then again, he probably forgot about it the first time it happened. Yeah. Why vote for Biden? I still am yet to meet an honest Biden supporter who will admit to have supporting him. Where are they? Anyway. James Hayes. Texas should put those refugees on military flights to Democrat states. True. Let them deal with their own administrative problems. Self-correcting issue.
Well, yep. California, didn't they just
you gotta
vote
put in the
no
rich areas,
to...
though.
Yeah, like Beverly Hills.
Yeah.
Hollywood. Mm. Just all those sorts of areas, just like, to really wind them up. They wanted to keep Newsom as well. It's their own fault.
Exactly. I mean, the rule should be like mansion, refugee. Like, keep going like that until they just live surrounded. Student of History says the border issue is going to get quite interesting if more states start sending aid to assist the Texan response. Yeah, it'd be pretty based as well if the rest of the states were like, you know, Gondor answers the call kind of thing.
Well, I mean, it's already great that Texas is kind of acting on its own, just like, yeah, we're building the wall that Trump was building.
Yeah. But you'd love to see DeSantis being like, Florida answers the call. You know, aid to Texas.
He would be one of the ones, wouldn't he?
The Riders of Florida. Fly. Ross Diggle says, my wife lived in the Dominican Republic. They and the Haitians hate each other. Yeah. The Dominicans started working the fields when they got freedom, and the Haitians refused as they are now free. This is why Dominican is so successful in comparison to Haiti, despite them being on the same island and the same people. Yeah, literally next to each other.
Yeah.
I've heard the argument that there's some climate difference because, of course, of the mountains in the middle, but I don't know. I've never been there. But either way, look, I mean, people have built successful civilizations in worse conditions than Haiti.
Yes.
And, yeah, they still managed
to... Well, I mean, Caribbean's a place where you're meant to go on a nice holiday, although I probably wouldn't want to go to Haiti, but even so...
Yeah, but replace the people, you get a different outcome. Probably not a bad argument. Kevin Fox, Abbott's job of building a wall will be cheaper since all materials are already there, brought and paid for by Trump. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Free Will 2112, Biden is not in charge. He's just a sickly puppet whose strings are being pulled by discrete parties with an agenda that does not include border security. The same forces are at work here too. Yeah. I'm still not sure how to talk about Biden's handlers. I'd love for him to just name them as well. We'll have a press conference from them.
Mm-hmm. He quite often refers to people in his administration like they're the ones like pulling the strings in a way. Like, oh, I'm going to get in trouble. Like, you're the president. You're not meant to get in trouble.
You're the leader. Lead. Midnight Marauder says, instead of Mexicans, Arabs, and Haitians, can we go back to Italians and Irish? I feel they were better guests. Yeah, this is the thing. They're more culturally different an immigrant group, the harder it is to integrate. It's fundamentally true.
Mm-hmm.
Although neither of those are also white, so what the left going to complain about? Did you get that?
Yeah, I think so.
Omar Awad, Islam doesn't censor anyone. They just moderate platforms by murdering, banning anyone who disagrees with their terms of Sharia. Yeah.
Yes.
Just content moderators, bro. Just to find a short one here. So Northamptonian Knight says, imagine if you weren't allowed to teach about Christ in a Christian school. Talk about a delusional doublethink. Yeah. It's Christophobic to say that Christ did a bad thing. I don't really know enough about Christ to know what the bad things he did, actually. Is there anything in his life he did that was particularly egregious? He sex slaves?
He interrupted trade on a Sunday once. I'm joking. I'm not being serious about that.
Crucified
He flipped over all the tables on a Sunday because it was a holy day. But I'm only joking. It's like a free market.
This sounds like a D thing to do as well.
Yeah, you could have just used words, but yeah. He's making a point, right?
Whatever. Rowan Acklock says, Muslims are being singled out by a cause about Islam. I suspect a few educational administrators need to repeat a year or three. Can they start with kindergarten? Yes, that's where the education in the University of Bristol needs to go. Ruben Sanchez says, Andrew Neil is a huge cuck. Yeah, I got no defense of this. I thought there might have been something to defend him on before, but nah, there's nothing. Nah, what a asshole, man. Anthony Parrish says, I hope the BBC 50 pieces of silver was worth it, Andrew. Yeah, I do wonder. Tell us how much you were paid. Just out of interest. How much do they pay to have you back?
Well, I mean, it's a win for the BBC, isn't it? So it's symbolic, so they're probably paying him quite a lot.
Yeah. I'd like to know how much. It's how much you're worth. Snowdog says, the first rule of Islam is you can't talk about Islam. The second rule of Islam is you cannot talk about Islam. And ending on that, no more talk about Islam. We're out of time. So if you want more from us, go to lotusears.com, sign up to get access to all the premium content. Silver, if you want to get access to the new audio file on the new article from Hugo. So go and give that a try. And otherwise, we'll be back tomorrow, 1 o'clock. Thank you and goodbye.